As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM. And we're back again. Just wanted to let you folks know we've got some interesting talents in the studio today. John Demers has walked back in the door to promote Go Fish, the independent film that's being produced here in North Carolina. I also have Paul Nage, who does Touchstones, which is the show that comes on right after the Speakeasy. And John Demers brought the director for the show, Jacob Chase. He's going to enlighten us a little bit on what that's all about. And, of course, I have John Paul.
Good morning.
Who absolutely insists on saying good morning every time. So there he is. I was just going to ramble through some interesting little perspectives that have come my way. Go ahead, John.
I just
Paul.
Want people to feel good, that's all.
I see. And that does it, huh?
That's
okay.
It.
Ira David Wood, buddy of mine in Raleigh, a big director, sent me something that I really thought was worth mentioning, so I'm going to open up the show with it. He wanted us to take the term billion a little more seriously, since we're spending billions in Iraq and so on and so forth, and I think the average American sort of throws that in somewhere in the perimeter of, oh, it's a few million or something. He sent me a rather unique analysis that I thought I'd roll off. The next time you use the word billion in a casual manner, think about this. A billion is a difficult number to comprehend, but one advertising agency did a good job of putting that figure into some perspective in one of its releases. A billion seconds ago, it was 1959. A billion minutes ago, Jesus was alive. A billion hours ago, our ancestors were living in the Stone Age. A billion days ago, no one walked on the earth on 2 feet. A billion dollars ago was only 8 hours and 20 minutes, at the rate our government is spending it. Spending it on accounts receivable tax, building permit tax, CDL license tax, cigarette tax, corporate income tax, dog license tax, federal income tax, federal unemployment tax, fishing license tax, and we'll get back to fishing, food license tax, fuel permit tax, gasoline tax, hunting license tax, inheritance tax and inventory tax, IRS interest charges, tax on top of tax, IRS penalties, tax on top of tax on top, blah, 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 liquor tax, luxury tax, marriage license tax, Medicare tax, property tax, real estate tax, service charge taxes, Social Security tax, road usage tax for truckers and us too. They're going to start propping up more and more of these toll places
where
on the road.
The Indians for the Boston Tea Party.
Sales tax, recreational vehicle tax, school tax, state income tax. I'm going to keep running on here because I want this to take an impression.
It's a rather taxing list.
I thought, I'm the one reading it. State unemployment tax, telephone federal excise tax, telephone federal universal service fee tax, telephone federal, state, and local surcharge tax, telephone minimum usage surcharge tax, telephone recurring and non-recurring charges tax, telephone state and local tax, telephone usage charge tax, utility tax, good Lord, vehicle license registration tax, vehicle sales tax, watercraft registration tax, well permit tax, just so you can drink your water eventually, workers' compensation tax. Not one of these taxes existed 100 years ago, and our nation was the most prosperous in the world. We had absolutely no national debt and had the greatest, largest middle class in the world. What the hell happened?
Really?
Tax.
Well, I'd like to point out that most of those taxes are regressive taxes as well, because the burden of those taxes falls more heavily on people with lower income than it does on people.
Well, that's the way the rich like it, isn't it?
That's the way they've got
and
it planned.
I'm tired of paying it, being in that bottom 5%. I'm tired.
That's what happens when you live in a fascist state.
So anyway, spilling the beans over into the direction of John Demers to begin with. They are producing a film. If you want to aim that mic a little more between the two
or
of
just
you,
get up
or
just
we're good.
Just
I know I'm pumping the meter. Don't
maneuver it.
It.
Okay.
The meter's moving when I talk.
Barry, barely.
Oh!
There we go.
Now John does.
That's projecting.
Okay, hold on one second. So anyway, give us some news on what's going on with Go Fish. You brought the director with you today, and how about introducing us?
I have brought the director. Go Fish has been moving along since you and I last got together. I believe Simon Barron and Goro Amasaki and Victoria.
Yes, hello to you folks.
Producers. Yep. And so, yeah, it is coming along. Simon and I have been working on business plans and all the things you've got to work on to get a movie ready to shoot. And part of that process is securing the director. And in securing the director, we need to get, you know, the director's vision of the film. One of the stories that we like to share around the office and with folks is, if you recall, the film Witness. The original screenplay had the film taking place in the police department, the majority of the film. When the director got hold of it, he felt like it would do better in the Amish community. So the director, although he did not get the Oscar for writing it, the director still rewrote a good portion of the script so that it took place in the Amish community because he felt that that would make for a better story. And that's part of why Jacob is on board, is that by having the director now, the director's going to get to put his mark on the picture.
Jacob is the visionary. And hello, Jacob. Jacob Chase.
Hello. How's it going?
Wonderful. So give us a little idea of the kind of vision that you're bringing to this. I realize it's still in evolvement because you're just dealing with the script right now. But
yeah.
Just wondering how you and John DeMers connected and give us a little spiel on how this all came about.
Sure. Well,
and what drew your interest, of course?
I've known Simon Barron for most of my life, actually. I started out in musical theater, and he saw me do some set and lighting work. Which I started when I got out of acting.
Mm-hmm.
Did some sets and lighting for some youth theater around town in L.A., which is where I'm from. Simon has been following my short films that I've been doing, and he was on set of my first feature, which I filmed a few months ago, and still in post production right now. It's called Eclipse of the Heart. It's actually it's a musical feature. Featuring all music from Meatloaf and all written by John Steinman.
Sounds romantic, but Meatloaf thrown in there, I'm not quite sure where it's going.
Yeah, it's a drama. It's a pretty dark show, but it's still a musical, so it's family friendly, which is where I like coming
is
from.
Is it the sequel to Sweeney Todd?
It is not. Not the sequel to Sweeney Todd.
Just wondering. Anytime I think of Meatloaf, it goes a little dark.
Yes. But no, Sweeney Todd, Sondheim is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But so that's so Simon brought Goro, who's another one of the producers on Go Fish, on set of my last feature, and they liked the way I worked, and you know, we were doing some big stuff on a very low budget, shooting on the CBS backlot in LA, and got some fun toys, big cranes and stuff. And
I tend to think that leans a little more on bringing out some true creativity, which is so missing in a lot of what is so highly funded these days.
Yeah, it's definitely much harder to make a film for such little money, but I think when you have so many more constraints, you're forced to be more creative, and that's helped me a lot to do films that are such low budget. So, and then this is obviously a bit bigger budget than that film, but still certainly in the low scale, definitely an independent film, and Simon was kind enough to get me involved with John here and bring me onto the project.
And so at this point, you're basically reviewing the whole thing and gestating whatever creativity you're going to give a certain vision and focus to.
I'm going to answer that one for him. Actually, what he's going to do this week is he's going to have interviews and meetings with key department heads for the project that have been tapped or targeted by Simon and I as people that Jacob could work with. And then he's got blocks of time where he's writing. Wednesday evening at a super secret location to all you wannabe actors, we're going to have him for a meet and greet.
It's actually over at Bush's place.
Yeah, right. It's at the White House. He can't get in. It's probably easy to get in there. But to get into our event, it will be very difficult. So we got that going on for him. And the meet and greet is really the opportunity for some of the folks he'll see while he's here and some folks he won't yet see to just come, put his face together, give him their business card, say a few pleasantries, drink soda pop. It's a family film, just emphasizing that. Maybe an adult beverage, you know, maybe, but it's a family film. So he's going to do that. And then He's going to have some time on Thursday and Friday where he's going to scout specific locations, Jordan Lake, Apex. He's going to be meeting with some of the town officials in Apex because that's where we're planning to shoot the film. And that's his week, packed.
Wonderful. And I've got a neighbor I eventually want to introduce him to who is one of these professional fishermen and lives for that.
Yeah, you know, about this is Paul from Touchstones. You know, one of the things about low-budget independent films is the incredible range of acting that you can see in it. You know, I mean, they're actors' movies, and you get a chance to see some really good emotional, heart-jerking content that isn't manipulated by cuts and, you know, and special effects, but rather just the emotions of the heart. How do you feel? How do you feel about you know, doing that kind of film? What kind of film that requires real work from your actors?
Well, I to be honest, I wouldn't want to do it any other way. I hope I don't ever need to make a film that relies on special effects or anything else instead of the acting. You know, I'm really, it's not just about the acting, it's about the stories that I'm drawn to are the kind of films that just don't require a lot of visual effects or a lot of trickery.
I personally would much rather see a good act than any special effect in the world.
Yeah.
Give me a good story, good dialogue, and a good way of delivering it.
Sure.
On another note, I want to introduce Paul Nash, whom I intend to interview just a little bit on this program, at least leading into the next. We're going to join him on his Touchstones. But I think I'll have Paul Nash introduce himself and his show Touchstones. He can probably do that better than I can, so I'm going to turn the microphone over to you, Paul. Give us a feel of Touchstones.
Well, I actually want, you know, I think that acting and you know, spirituality are very closely together, you see, you know, because at very early, you know, the early part of the Greek theater and so forth, Greek theater was an extension of the dramos, you know, the mystery, the story of the gods. So even your fishing story, you know, is part of this dramos of, you know, of the human being, you know, on the surface of the water, the alien world, you know, a world that you can't survive in, right, which is that lake down there, you know. And, you know, and yet you're sticking this line down there with a hook on it, you know, and you're going to pull something out, you know, and that something's going to be special, right, like that. What is that, bass? So, you know what I mean? There's some depth there, you know? This is, you know, old man of the sea kind of depth, you know? This primordial, archetypal movement. You're going to get any Jungian psychologists on your to consult on your script?
Give us a clue about Touchstones.
Oh. Well, Touchstones is a show that deals with religion here in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Which, if everybody noticed, I've noticed if you've listened to any of the other shows, you notice that you didn't know you had so many Rosicrucians and mavens of the occult as we have here. But I also plan to occasionally get a real bona fide minister on the show that will evangelize us.
Well, you remember, everyone can be saved.
Yes, but some of us more easily than others. But yeah, let's go back to fishing, which is another form of yeah.
I want to talk about Touchstones with you first.
Oh, all right. Go ahead.
Let's stick to your program first and introduce the folks to Touchstones, and then we'll dabble back into the fishing realm.
But, you know, fishing is such a great theme. You know, it's such a spiritual theme. I mean,
well,
you just think
fishing,
of that.
Claudio is fishing for more information about Touchstones.
Oh, Touchstones. Well, okay, you know, practically, all you have to do is tune into Claudio's show and not turn it off afterwards. And I usually come on afterwards. And, you know, and I'm there, and I'll have a guest. I don't usually know who it is until I get there. But the end, we'll talk about, you know, whatever is the most significant thing in their life.
Yeah, but we want to hear about your attitudes, about your proclivities when you come on the air. What are you bringing to these discussions?
Yeah, well, normally I don't discuss those things.
I know, but that's why we're trying to pull that out of you now.
But
we're going to get a pair of pliers pretty soon and do it with teeth.
Yeah,
be
right.
Concerned if they get rubber gloves to pull it out. Okay.
You know, my own interest in spirituality goes back to being an anthropologist and studying cults for years.
Ah, now we're getting.
And I was in a couple of cults when I was younger and didn't know any better. And of course, that's, you know,
I did that too. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought it was an easy place to get you know, meet ladies, you know, but but it didn't work that way. It didn't work that way out too well.
Bringing that broom, is that what happened?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. They kept using the wrong end of it on me. Yeah.
Here come those rubber gloves.
Yeah. Right. So it was. Yeah.
Well, at that point, I think here we have some idea as to Paul Nash, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, Paul, but we've got a few subjects to jump onto, and one of the things I wanted to bring up was, John Paul, you have a little political unmedia content that you wanted to make people aware of, being that we just lost 11 soldiers to this pathetic war, and I don't even think it can rightfully be called a war. In Iraq, I think you had some information you wanted.
Well,
to
it's really an occupation now. One of the very few things that Bush has been right about was that the war is over. It's an occupation. It's no longer a war. There's a civil war going on in Iraq, but it's not the U.S. Waging war on a country. It's the U.S. Taking sides in a civil war now.
The U.S. just landed among tribes.
Right. The U.S. has taken up the side of one of the Shia factions that's allied with Maliki. And they've also completely screwed up all the potential for settlements over there among the various religious factions. The latest thing that happened was that General William Odom has, in a conference call on April 1st, has come out with a very definitive statement about the war. And I'm just going to read. It's very short.
This is the fellow who was over there.
This is a general, right? You know, a retired general.
One actually brave enough to speak out against this.
Well, and he has been telling things as they are from way early. He was originally considered to be one of the national security advisors, and was axed by the neocons.
Oh yes,
because he was too actually, you know, honest. You can't
Couldn't
have that.
Have that
no, we can't
House.
Have that
no.
in the government. So here's what he says. The only sensible strategy is to withdraw rapidly, but in good order. Only that step can break the paralysis now gripping U.S. strategy in the region. The next step is to choose a new aim, regional stability, not a meaningless victory in Iraq.
How about having the politicians do some work and actually negotiating and establishing something? That's a battle that's not being fought at all.
Well, in fact, that exact approach is what Dennis Kucinich offered in legislation in Congress in 2005. He offered such legislation. Besides being the guy who organized the move in the House against the war, he got 123 people to team up with him to vote against the war. Of course, they didn't prevail. But, you know, his plan was exactly that. Immediately start getting the people in the region involved, countries in the region involved. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that went out the window because what you see happening in Iraq now and what has happened all along is not a mistake, okay? It's not a mistake. It's exactly what the Bush administration wanted. Chaos is what they want.
To keep on a perpetual war.
Because that is the justification for staying there and raping the resources of Mesopotamia, of Iraq. And that really is what this has been about from the very beginning. United States hegemony and imperialistic rule.
And here's Paul Nash with a comment.
Well, talk about sloppy seconds, man. I mean, Mesopotamia has been racked over for a long time. Did you know it used to be the most wonderful forested place? You know, if you read Gilgamesh, you know, they were running around in deep, dark forests.
Yeah, they were.
And now, you know, but, you know, it's been completely disforested. And there's a whole variety of things. You know, I think that the problem is that as long as there are a majority of American troops in the country, they're using that as an excuse not to come to a reconciliation amongst themselves. They can use us. So we're actually acting as a wedge to keep them.
That's exactly what Odom is saying.
To keep the political paralysis
exactly
going.
That's exactly what Odom has said. And many others have said that too. Scott Ritter has said that. You know,
what's your take, movie directors? John, you got any comment there? I know you usually have.
What the hell are you talking about, boy?
All I got to say is everybody just needs to go fish.
I think so.
I do have a thought on it, and Paul, I think, hit on it vividly. I mean, at one time, those were lush, beautiful places. We didn't destroy it first, but we're certainly not helping it now.
We didn't destroy it first, but we destroyed it best.
Yeah, we
completely destroyed that country, and we started in 1991. That whole 1991 thing was a setup. The United States wanted Iraq to invade Kuwait.
We could have kept that from happening.
We set that up.
Well, we allowed it to happen.
We practically made it happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, yeah, but you got to remember, we have a government that has a left hand and a right hand, and it intentionally doesn't allow them to speak to each other.
Well, I don't believe that's true. I have to disagree with you on that.
I think to a point there's some accuracy there.
Because they want it to look like that, and they do a very good job of making it look like that. But in fact,
you've got two people running. You've got the lobbyists on K Street, who deal with issues that deal with money. And this war, what's this war really about? It's about money.
It's about money and resources. Well, resources is money.
Right, because they treat it as a commodity rather than something useful for everybody. The resource is not only oil.
It's water.
That's right.
The reason Mesopotamia has been the hot spot that it's been for eons is because of water, not oil. Oil is very recent in history.
And I think the point that John Paul was trying to make there, John, is that he feels that there is communication unbeknownst to us, that more on the conspiratorial levels.
Correct. That I agree with. At a conspiratorial level, yes, it is. But I think at the level at which people really believe they're working in government and they're trying to do a good job, I think there's a level of frustration that they go, why does this happen? And they don't realize that it's orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's orchestrated.
Very much so.
Yeah, you know, as far as conspiracies go, I think...
I didn't use the word conspiracy.
I did.
You don't have to have a conspiracy when everybody already knows what to do. It's not a conspiracy. It's a paradigm. It's a working model. It's a long-standing paradigm.
Oh, okay. In other words, the script's already laid out. There doesn't need to be any secret actors.
Yeah? Because people are already in a mindset, and they've been put in that mindset, some intentionally, others, serendipitously. So you've got a confluence of these mindsets that go to make up the reality that we see. It doesn't need to be a conspiracy.
Okay, we're going fishing now.
Let's go fishing.
So much of that dose, folks. We figured you might want to stir that into your coffee. But
hey, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was actually.
Yeah.
Just keep in mind that's not a gnat on your windshield, but a mat truck in your lap.
That's actually a big juicy bug splattered all over.
And it's called your government. Time to wake up and stop taking it for granted. You can't watch a movie and make it go away. But speaking of movies, here we go back to Go Fish. Jacob, I wanted to ask you what it was that originally drew you to this, other than John naturally approaching you upon meeting you in L.A. I was wondering what your inspiration or what drew you to the film Go Fish. I'm sure that's a loaded question.
I think the big thing is the genre of the picture.
The coming of age aspect?
The coming of age story, and the fact that it's a family movie and it's going to be good for everybody to watch, which mm-hmm. is something that I aspire to make. I there's a lot of independent films, and certainly all films, but especially in the independent realm that come out that are very risque. And,
who is the author?
Of the script originally mm-hmm. Was mm-hmm. Goro.
Goro, okay.
Who was one of the producers on it. And I think this was... almost the scripts that I had been getting from other producers and such to potentially look at directing have been all about, teen angst and, who they can sleep with and, mm-hmm. and drinking and drug use. And it's just something that I'm not really interested in making and not something that I want to fill the movie world with more.
It's probably been beaten to death at this point anyway.
Yes, absolutely. And so this film... was one that stood out to me as something that spoke to me and was about a coming-of-age story, which is mm-hmm. something that
which appeals to me very much.
Yeah.
Because I know that subject matter has been dealt with pretty consistently as well, but it's always nice to see a new angle.
Right.
John, how did you guys connect?
Well, again, Simon Barron and I have known each other for 6 or 7 years. We worked together on a short film project here in North Carolina where I met him, and we've kept in touch. And, when you're a producer, and of course,
like Jacob, I came from acting, and I still will act from time to time, but it's, you know, I enjoy putting the business part of this together. Mm-hmm. I enjoy seeing all the paper come together, getting the rights to a story idea, seeing all of that get facilitated by a well laid out plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mind saying that the director's vision is clear, family film. I mean, if you look at the business research, family films do better financially than other films. They just financially do well. And we wanted to follow that, one, to take into consideration the people that will be financially backing the film. And then, two, in line with what Paul was saying earlier about, you know, and I read into more than what Paul said, but, you know, I'm not a big marquee talent guy. I mean, I have nothing against Tom Cruise. I have nothing against that level of performer. But, you know, that business model is all about, well, if Tom Cruise is in it, we know what opening weekend is going to be like. If it's a lousy movie, we're going to get this amount of money and that, and we're going to follow the model.
And it's going to be more based on sensationalism than anything else.
And all the things that I'm not really into because they cost money, special effects, mm-hmm. blow them up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Right. We're back to, you know, everything hanging out because there is no underwear on underneath and all that other stuff. So we look at then, all right, well, if this is a business decision, well, then, yeah, follow the family film genres because they financially do better, but then get a good story. You don't need a marquee name if you have a good story. You just need good talent to tell the story.
Very true.
So then if you're looking at it still at a business model and say, well, we got to find some way to make sure we have some sort of solid financial backing, we're looking at, in this case with this film, you know, America has a real solid angler community, fishing community, anglers,
mm-hmm.
and Japan as well. This country supports two national fishing publications. Japan, for its size, has over a dozen fishing publications.
Are you talking about the entire country or North Carolina?
The entire country
right
of Japan. And I'm talking about our entire country. Right. So Japan, as a percentage of population, is very aggressive mm-hmm. in fishing. I know for a fact from my research and preparing for this film at a business level that the fishing lure companies, the boating companies like Ranger Boats, etc., they are very aggressive in the Japan markets. They are really putting their marketing dollars there versus this country, really. I mean, this country's strong, but I mean, they're really chasing those dollars in Japan because they really, really go after fishing.
Well, let me throw something into the mix here. They're also a little concerned over there about depleting their fishing supply. So I'm not quite sure if this doesn't have a negative aspect as well.
Well, that's more of the ocean fishing. That's not fishing. And in the sport fishing, they're really, especially the bass community, it is about catch and release. And they're very much into educating people about catch and release fishing.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the family aspects of this film, Jacob, and specifically the, you know, you've got the grandfather, and you know, there's so much you can do with grandfathers, you know, because grandfathers can be so many different types of people. And I remember once is that there's a real big difference between parents and grandparents, you know, because, you know, parents are reactive. You know, they're going to say, don't do this and don't do that and don't be this way and don't be that way because we were that way and we don't want you to be that way.
And the grandparents are more forgiving. Is that where you're going?
Well, yeah. Well, the grandparents, they've already been through the reactive phase and they're seeing their crazy kids raising you. And they think, well, kick back and relax, boy. This is okay. You could be yourself where you're at.
It's not my kid. I don't have to take it home at the end of the
day. That's right. There can be more, so they're less reactive. And by being that way, they give more space for the kid to grow and to get the kid to be themselves and discover who they are without trying to be the carbon copy of the parents' desires. As again, the reactiveness off sometimes is the parents are pushing the kid to be the way they wanted to be but weren't, so they're having kids instead, you know. So you have this whole variety of dynamics. And you got that, you know, as it were, reflected on the lake of bass fishing. I think you've got, you know, as far as the themes go, you've got some really interesting things to do. Is there going to be a love interest? Is this boy going to come to age where he's going to notice an awakening libido?
There is, because one of the things, and I'll tie up the business end, and then I'll let Jacob and you two do the creative stuff, but the other side was we did want some kind of a, if you'll pardon the pun, hook in our picture. So we're going for a known name in Japan for a grandfather. We have two grandfathers. One is Japanese, and there are two grandchildren. And the granddaughter is also Japanese. So you have two teenagers, you know, that are finding themselves. So Jacob has, you know, quite a workload ahead of him. But we've got culture. But from the business end, we were really targeting the Japan market. That's really where we want to go for a theatrical release in a large way. And then we'll build on it in this market through limited releases and then DVD sales. So there really is a plan in place to get it to the audience through self-direct distribution methods, as well as some partnering on some regional plateau distribution.
Considering going back to the cultural aspect of it, are we talking more about a prearranged type relationship or something more incidental?
As far as the film or the
business
side?
As far as the film goes, the film.
On the business side, we're looking at some relationships already. The executive producer, Goro Hamasaki, has relationships with distributors in Japan.
Uh-huh, good.
And so, yeah, we're working on a front-end arrangement with it.
And then roll that over into the relationship potential in the story itself.
The roles. Well,
the culture would be more in a prearranged way if it's a Japanese.
It would be. I don't know where Jacob's really kind of going to go with that. He and Goro, that's... You know, there is only a point to which the producers get into the creative.
Mm-hmm,
and
I
that's
understand.
Just to see.
And plus, we don't
want to
give away the story. So.
Well, and that won't be a problem because everyone's going to go see it eventually.
Go see, go fish.
Yeah.
Any continuing comments there from the director? Please feel free to espouse anything as far as the script itself. Or
sure. I mean, I'm learning more on this radio station than I knew before myself.
Lots of ideas.
No, you know, I actually just came into town, into North Carolina
from
yesterday.
LA.
Yeah, from L.A. So I'm still myself learning, you know, about the business plan and about the plans for the film. But, you know, I've been focusing just on a creative level on the of the film so far. I think, you know, what you were saying about the... about the grandpa relationship, I think that's exactly the key to the film is that, you know, the grandpa is not his parent, and so he has the ability, our main character has the ability to look at him and build a friendship with him, which is different from, you know, a parental relationship.
More space in the relationship.
Right, which is I feel how it's going to differ from a lot of other coming of age stories that have been out. So.
And the grandparent are also a natural defense system for some of the unforeseen little wrongs the children play at or do anyway.
Right.
Well, you know, that you brought in the bicultural model that you have Japan, which is an incredibly rich culture, and it just so happens I happen to know a lot about it, or know something about it. But, you know, the thing is that with a Japanese, particularly Japanese cultural heritage, grandfather, you could have the whole issue of the of Shinto, and Shinto has a really interesting orientation towards the spirits, towards respect for the land, and it went through a major growth spurt after World War II, you know, as a way of the Japanese renewing themselves after the disgrace they went through with the loss of World War II, and they went through this spiritual crisis. And amongst the things they did is they became critical of their aristocratic religions, which are the ones we know best here. For instance, the Zen, which we know was an aristocrat's religion. If you were a peasant, you didn't become a Zen Buddhist. You became you followed Shinto, and if you got into trouble with your lord, you ran off into the mountains and hid out. And of course, what do? One of the things you do in the mountains is you fish. You know, it's one of the ways you get by. You hike around, you fish, and you worship the kami. You know, the whole issue of respect for the things. If you have an opportunity, bringing in some of that echoes of the Japanese culture, specifically the kami and the Shinto aspects, or the Shugindo, which is a form of Japanese Buddhist religion, Yamabushi, which is the hermits that run around in the mountains, you might find it really fascinating as just echoes to what possibilities there could be in terms of, you know, the magical aspects of fishing.
Interesting idea. Was that around the time frame that you were shanghaied, or where did your experience come from?
Yes, I did spend some time on mountains. Spending too much time. You know, they one of the things they do is they hang out upside down off cliffs. The Shinto, and I used to do a little of that. And I'll tell you, man, that's scary.
I can believe it. hanging upside down.
Sounds nuts to me.
Not for me, thank you.
Thanks anyway.
I'm going to give a little PSA here before our show comes to its latter part. This is a WCOM benefit concert that's going to be happening, let's see, on Saturday, April 19th. We are having a musical extravaganza benefit at the Cat's Cradle, famous little spot here in Chapel Hill. There will be seven hot bands playing from 8 p.m. until 1 a.m. The bands are Stranger Spirits, The Water Callers, Harmute,
it's a cold band.
The Prayers and Tears of Arthur Digby Sellers, Sweater Weather, Violet Vector and the Lovely Lovelies, Crash and DJ Trizak. The doors open at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are available at the Cat's Cradle, $8 in advance or $10 at the door. Your ticket is good for all seven bands. So support your all-volunteer community radio station and listen to great music at the same time. Come out to the Cat's Cradle on Saturday, April 19th, and we thank you for your support. Also want to mention to you folks that Claudio Speakeasy is still welcoming sponsors, and for that you can go to my website, which is www.claudioarts.com. And again, we thank you for your support. Wanted to add a little bit of breaking news here. Something that spills a little back to the Bush administration. Big oil invades polar bear's Arctic home. A deadly new Arctic oil rush is underway. I'm sure Bush is hurrying these things along since he's about to get out of office. And it's threatening polar bears and all wildlife that get in the way. In the biggest oil and gas sale in Alaska's history, the Bush administration has just auctioned off the polar bear's home in the Chukchi Sea to Shell and other oil giants. And there's really no way that America can compensate for the diminishing oil. So I really don't understand what at best this could provide. Meanwhile, the administration has delayed a decision to protect polar bears under the Endangered Species Act. Yeah, I wonder why. Please help NRDC take the Bush administration back to court and save the polar bear from rampant oil development and the lethal oil spills that are sure to follow.
That's the National Resources Defense Council.
Thank you. And it's great we've got this theme, Go Fish, because the bloody news is tense, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's time to go fish.
Nature doesn't seem to matter to this administration or to so many people that have sort of been diverted from it.
I played Go Fish with my granddaughters the other day.
Maybe we can get Bush to just go fish.
I wish. Hey, that rhymes. Yo, Bush and the White House gang, go fish someplace. Someplace volcanic.
Yes.
Indeed. So let's throw the ball back in your court there, John. I'm sure you've got some things to add about the promo.
No, again, though, listening to Paul, I mean, I think there are
some great ideas thrown in there. Yeah, more.
Well,
on the cultural,
all the great stories that we end up seeing on the big screen are usually some version of some Asian themed story. I mean, look at Star Wars.
Oh, there's a lot of that there. Yeah.
If any of you know Joseph Campbell and ever read or studied some of Joseph Campbell, you know his story about George Lucas and Star Wars and where it came from and how it came to be. And I'm a firm believer that most all the stories have been told. You just repackage them. And I just think that we've got a unique way to repackage a coming-of-age story with cultures involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then targeting so that, again, I've got to say it, and I know I upset some of my friends. I'm not in the art for the art. I'm in the art for the money. It's a business decision.
Well, there's got to be the financial.
Except
guy.
That I believe that what has happened is people come along and a good concept or a good idea works and it makes money and someone else wants to do it and then someone else does it and then someone gets an MBA that just tells them how to cookie cutter a business model and the creativity gets lost in creating something. Mm-hmm. we talked about all those taxes earlier and 100 years ago why our country was so successful and so popular. It's because we weren't either taxed monetarily or taxed by regulation or taxed by somebody saying, no, you can't. You can't have a creative production, producerial, and I'm not talking movie, spirit, if you don't have the freedom to do it.
Yeah, and that's what happens in government and in organized religion. Take it, Paul.
Yeah.
Well, besides what I, as you may tell by looking at me, I like to eat, and I like to travel around and try the local cuisine. And you notice there's less and less local cuisine in America. We've gotten dozens of McDonald's, and they're all pretty bad. and we got dozens of Burger Kings, you know, and basically we got a generic America where we have all of these prepackaged world, and you try to go there and you try to find the way they do home fries locally. You know, you could travel around and get local cuisine. You know, my idea, meeting the people and meeting the food was my idea of getting to the locality of the place.
Which brings a question to my mind. Is anybody going to eat any fish in this story?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, we said something about Tropical Moon there. I'll let you elaborate.
Chef Claudio does have that wonderful Tropical Moon spice that's out that I have been lavishly putting on the food that I chef in my home for over 10 years. And all I can say is I'm going to encourage strongly that we find some place for product placement for it, because people should know that it's not just good on meat and vegetables. It's great on large mouth bass.
Ta-da.
And that was an unsolicited advertisement.
Absolutely. And actually, the seafood was my original design, but then it became the whole concept became much more universal. It's an emulsification of 20 different herbs and spices.
But back to the creative side again, and that is, if this were a Hollywood picture, I'm telling you, Claudio, you'd never have a prayer's chance. Excuse me, Paul, didn't mean to step in on your area, but you wouldn't have a prayer's chance of getting your product placed.
Pray for me, Paul.
It just couldn't happen. But when you come to this level where there's the freedom to go with the creativity and to create the business model at the same time, then you have possibility.
This is also why I believe in community radio.
There you go. There you go.
We still have the actual freedom to speak and not just give corporate speak. I've been trying to convince John for years. Actually, he approached me at one time, already being quite convinced, to be the guy behind Tropical Moon and help me get it to market. So we still have to talk about that. And it looked like Paul had some comment to say there. I'm not sure if it's fishy or what.
Well, you know, as it is like local placement, you know, as I said, you know, you can't get local cuisine anymore, or it's harder and harder to find, you know, those out of the way places. While you're here, Jacob, you got to go to one of them Mayflower fish places. They're kind of a thing, but that's the way North Carolina does fish. It's real different, and it doesn't require you got to do the barbecue. You got to do the North Carolina barbecue. By the way, I'm a native San Franciscan. I've only been here about 12 years, but you know, and I won't hold LA against you. But but I have, you know, gotten acclimatized to eating some of the food. And while you're here, even if you're going to be here for a while, you gotta try to barbecue. And not forget the ribs, man. You got to do the pulled pork.
That's what I hear.
It's the pulled pork, it's an acquired taste. So don't just turn it down the first time you eat it. You know, you got to chew it for a while.
As a matter of fact, I got an offer I can put on the table. We were talking about potentially meeting my neighbor, who is a professional bass fisherman. When you guys come out, I'll do a little bit of that in my backyard on the grill.
Ooh,
so we make a pulled pork. Yeah, well, actually, what I'll do is I'll bring in the mayor of Lizard Lake, who has these big pig cookers, and he can come by, and we can turn it into a small event. So that's an offer that's on the table. And it's even, and Tropical Moon is even good on pork. But then again, we're not here promoting Tropical Moon.
Right.
Right. I didn't bring it up. Maybe I did.
Where can you find this stuff? If somebody was interested in trying Tropical Moon, how possibly could they get it?
Well, there's a box
Claudio?
Of it right behind Claudio over there. Quick run over to the studio.
Right now, I am the only resource for it and have been for the last almost 30 years. But go to my website. There's a culinary button on the website, claudioarts.com. And that's about the only way to find it presently. Hopefully, John will help me change that.
Yes.
So are there any hallucinogenic qualities to this spice by any chance?
This I may not reveal.
Only if you snort it.
There is a certain cacti leaf that I give alongside with it.
It's got nutmeg in it, so you snort enough of it, you'll get off.
Okay. Go fish. Let's go back there, shall we?
The only other thing I think that I noted when Paul was talking earlier too, one of the things that is lacking in storytelling a lot anymore because of the packaging. Again, it's the cookie cutter model.
The corporate
rhythm. Even for the independent film producer, they seem to want to emulate the big guys, and so they want to do the same kinds of things, why you have so many horror films and everything else coming out, because they feel like, well, if it works at that level, it should work here. And so you lose, again, the creativity. But storytelling is about cultures. It's about the interaction between families. Grandparents interact differently to grandchildren than parents interact.
And very much the history that sort of emanates in discussion or in interaction, because that's essentially how you deliver the entire premise.
That's exactly right. And if you think back on how these two grandparents may have met each other, I mean, I don't know how Jacob will actually tie them together, but did they meet because they were part of Reconstruction in Japan and the grandfather was over there? I mean, you know, you don't know what all interactions take place between people. And yet,
very true.
That's what we go to see as a story. And so you want a little laughter, you want a little crying, you want to see a little action, because you got to move the story along. But you lose all the creativity when you start dealing at the level at which Hollywood tends to deal.
It's what I call cheap shots.
Yeah, and so you got to bring it back home. Everything works better when you come home. Everything. Schools work better when you have them back home. Everything works better when it's done at a local level, and you don't have somebody above you telling you how to do it.
Bring it back to the native level. I'm sure Jacob didn't realize he was coming into this cauldron of bohemian thought today. Paul, did you have something to say? You seemed...
Well, Jacob, this is a question for you. But, you know, the way that a great coming-of-age story works is in the... the kid is leaving childhood behind and is, you know, coming up with new potentials that they have, you know, like they're just learning how to think, you know, they suddenly discover their minds, you know, or they just, besides, you know, just discovering their loins, you know, they discover levels and depths or aspects of things that they didn't see before, but it's all a mystery to them. It's both a mystery and it's that thrill of new discovery, you know, which is the classic coming of age. So, you know, and that's probably the way that a good coming of age is, things happen. You know, there's this transformation taking place. Have you given any thought to that?
That's a pretty broad.
Well, it's broad questions, and then you can pick your spot.
Yes, I obviously have thought a lot of coming of age. I mean, you know, I think all my films that I've done have been about different kind of.
Tell us about some of the other ones you've done.
All my films that have currently been shown in festivals and around town.
More in the independent film scene.
Yeah, and they've all been shorts so far as I said.
What name? I mean, like Full Frame was just here in Durham. What were the independents that you ran yours through?
What festivals?
Mm-hmm.
I had a film. Probably my biggest win was in the Rhode Island Film Festival. Had a short win. Win best short there.
That's an impressive area.
Yeah, it's called Detention. It's a coming of age story. It's a movie about a kid stuck in detention in his classroom, and he discovers he has the power to erase anything he sees with disastrous consequences.
Aha.
Ends up erasing part of his family and stuff. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I have always woven in my stories with a fantasy element far, for the most part, except for I had a short that was about fishing that I did, which I'm not even sure if these guys have seen that. But that one's called Sycamore Creek, which also got some play in the New York Long Island area, which is about a little girl going fishing with her grandpa and runs away for the day, and her grandfather has to find her.
Ah, it might be worth showing these guys.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Of course, you've already got the ticket, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, but no, all my films have, for the most part, have been about children and growing up, because I'm still very young, and that's the.
I was going to say, how long have you been at this? The film work.
As I've mentioned, I started out in acting when I was about 7 years old.
And that went back to you being in Peter Pan, right?
Tell us some of your acting credentials.
Give us some of that. We're moving the mic around. That's the drone sound you're hearing, folks.
Right. I did musical theater a lot. I did quite a few productions of Peter Pan and The Music Man and Annie Get Your Gun and Broadway's Beauty and the Beast and quite a few others. I did some TV work.
That's very impressive. And how come you didn't stay in that ballpark?
You know, it's... it's sort of, I think, all in the same realm of creativity.
Oh, I'm sure it is, just sort of steps up the ladder.
Yeah, but yeah.
Some people stay there.
Right, definitely. And, you know, I could certainly see myself going back to musical theater. I did a lot of TV and film work, too, for many years, but it wasn't as exciting for me. I'm sure you guys are from theater, too, so I'm sure mm-hmm. you understand that. And, you know, I'd love to go back to musical theater eventually, and also direct musical theater is sort of one of my ultimate goals.
They can always use the genre of art films
mm-hmm.
to play into that realm.
Yeah. you know, I got into to directing because I think that that's sort of, you get to, you know, as an actor, you get to be part of the emotional process that people go to or go through watching the film or the on stage show. And as a director, you get to create that instead. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know, I think it's the same sort of aspect. I would, my first feature, which was the musical, it was a musical film, which is sort of, I feel the best of all possible worlds for me because it's getting direct film, but mm-hmm. it's also a musical. So hopefully that'll be done soon and people will start to see that.
There's not very much musical film done anymore, is there? I mean, there's very few.
The closest thing we've had is Sweeney Todd, which just came out and ended up being a pretty big hit.
Yeah, it's been coming back, actually. People have been...
Yeah, it seems like it's ready now.
You know, with Chicago and Hairspray mm-hmm. and
that's
Sweeney
true.
Todd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hairspray I've not yet seen. Is that good?
Oh, the musical on stage is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the musical was great.
That's what I heard. I just couldn't imagine some of the characters in the film pulling it off, but that's just me.
We're back to that marquee thing.
Oh, yes.
The Hairspray, the musical, the movie, was about packaging marquee talent mm-hmm. to a project. It wasn't about going out there and just finding really creative people, perhaps some of the original cast members from the Broadway production, but it was about attaching marquee talent. I mean, I John Travolta, I think, is a talented man. And my
bizarre
hat's off
bloody
that he
role
did
for
this.
Him, though.
But there was nothing that drew me to go see John Travolta play that part in
Same
Hairspray.
Here. Same here. And I haven't seen it yet.
I think the only musical movie that's come out recently that hasn't relied on marquee talent was Rent, and that did disastrously mm-hmm. in the
you're right.
In the box office.
Well, Sweeney Todd seems to have pulled it off. I wonder what they did differently.
They did.
Well, Johnny Depp, and it was kind of formulaic in that sense,
yeah,
the old Chris Burton sense.
Yeah, well, I don't. Musicals are not something I particularly enjoy seeing, but I was actually incredibly bored through the Johnny Depp performance of what was this? What's this movie?
Sweeney Todd.
You know, and I thought you know, I mean, I know I have always thought Johnny Depp was incredible. Of course, the first movie I noticed him at was not, you know, Scissorhands for some reason. I skipped that. But it was the, you know, Benny and June.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And he's brilliant in that, you know. And I said, this guy's got charisma out the gazoo, and he's going to be a great actor. And I was glad that, you know, that people in Hollywood noticed that. You know?
Yeah.
But he was a brilliant. He's a brilliant actor, and he brought himself into that Sweeney Todd thing, but there wasn't enough range for him in it. Not for his particular talent. And I thought it was a beautiful number artistically in terms of the sets, design, the way it was photographed. But it wasn't maybe there's a part of me that that the original Sweeney Todd speaks to me more. So I was disappointed with that, and sad that in some ways that it got such notice when he does such better work.
Tell me, Paul, why don't you have a show on films instead of one on religion?
Yes, yeah, good review there.
You've got a hell of a knowledge of films. It's amazing.
you do sound like a good film critic. I just wanted to wrap that because I wanted to get more to Jacob, and we've only got 5 minutes left. So there you go, Johnny. Go back to your pub.
Yeah, guys, come on, Jacob. You got the last word, and we hope you come back and tell us how your process goes with developing this film.
Oh, we'll follow up. We will follow up.
Yeah, I've got John there. And how are the wolves, by the way? Speaking of a totally different subject there, John Demers raises his own wolves.
The wolves are doing very well.
Are they?
They like these cool evenings still,
I'm sure.
And they play a lot with that. And I'm going to be taking Jacob out to see the wolves a little later this morning.
All right. Still keep me in mind for a cub.
looking forward to it.
Indeed. So at this point, we can pretty much bring the show to a wrap. I mean, we've got a few minutes left. Anything else anybody wants to plug about Go Fish? I personally think we've covered a lot of territory with it. Sounds like something I'm going to want to see.
The one thing I guess I really want to say is that I've been immensely pleased with the number of folks who have kind of come out of the woodwork in a positive way. You know, people come out of the woodwork for movies. And then when you say low budget, they go back in the woodwork, which is good because the ones that stay are the ones that really see the passion. And we've been very fortunate to find a number of clubs in the area that deal with bass fishing, and they've just been wonderful to talk to. And I'm looking forward to meeting your friend, too, Claudio. And so
his name's Gail. Gail Black.
Gail Black.
And I'll tell him that I mentioned him on the radio.
Excellent. And we're just looking forward. Town of Apex has been great to work with. The folks out at Jordan Lake.
They're good
the
folks.
State
I used to live there.
Commissioner Aaron Surratt and Sally Hedrick. They're all wonderful folks. We're going to look forward to doing this and a couple of more after this one.
Well, I can't imagine the support getting anything but stronger because you're highlighting something that they love, and that's very rarely done.
And great. Here we go with another.
Back to you, Jacob.
Another thought.
Who's got the thought? Paul?
Well, I was just saying, so Apex is going to take the bang away from Wilmington, huh? As far as local production of movies go.
Why not?
That would be a good move.
I think
so. That
would
be an excellent move.
I think Wilmington's a little overrated at this point. So, Jacob, any closing comment on where you are with the project or...
Well, you know,
I'm not sure which lights are on and which lights are off just yet.
I'm, you know, hoping to get a good outline and the next draft of the film done in the next couple weeks, and then obviously everyone can move forward with getting the right visual aspects in place and the right location. So
get all that work around you and just sort of be absorbed by it and
yeah.
Come out with your creativity.
Do we have an ETA on the finishing the film?
Yeah, I believe John has that.
We are looking at going into production mid to late summer in the July, August, early September window. And then we're planning to take it to market, American Film Market, in November for our first public screenings. Prior to that, we may have some folks that have seen it for potential distribution, but we can expect that just after the first of the year, we'll probably have our North Carolina screening of that film.
Now, is there a possibility that the Speakeasy will be invited to a screening?
That is to go without saying.
Thank you. So we've all heard it.
So, Claudio, why don't we recap who we had here with
Absolutely.
Us?
Absolutely. We had Jacob Chase, who was brought in from L.A. by John Demers and company, to direct the film Go Fish. He's presently working on the screenwriting element of it, as well as just looking for, I think, visual sites for the film here in North Carolina, and even more locally than that, as far as that goes. And also we had Mr. Touchstone's Paul Nash, with whom we are, John Paul and I, are going to be on next, so keep us tuned in for that. He's gonna be taking the interviewing position and nail our butts on that one. We'll see. Also, we wanted to mention that you go ahead, John Paul.
You are listening to WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
And if there's any closing comment from you, John, you're welcome to it. Otherwise?
It's always a great day to breathe.
That's a good thought. Well, on that note, folks, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM, bidding you a good day. Cheers until next time.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with the song of my heart, and the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift, adrift. Drifting ever back to you.